Okay, so Shavua Tov, everyone, welcome to our part two on Reuven. And so last week we began speaking about Reuven in particular through the prism of understanding that Reuven is the Bechor of Yaakov, and not just the Bechor from one of the mothers, but specifically the firstborn of all of the brothers, right? The biological firstborn of Leah and the biological firstborn of Yaakov. And what's so interesting about him, as we said, is that he's the Bechor, so he feels like he needs to fill certain shoes, that he needs to show that he is the firstborn, and therefore, at least in those days, more superior than everyone else, and always sort of acting as the leader. But for some reason, he always seems to just fall a little bit short. He tries so hard, but he just seems to always fall a little bit short from that. And so we began speaking about him a little bit, and I think last time we got up to speaking about the incidents with his one of his father's concubines or wife, a little unclear what the status of both Bilhah and Zilpah were regarding Yaakov. Regardless, that he did try to sort of usurp in some way Bilhah from Yaakov, so that he would not end up with the concubine of Rachel Imenu. Of course, Yaakov was quote unquote favorite wife, but rather that he would go to be with Leah, which is of course more preferable and always one of the goals that Reuven had, to improve the relationship between Yaakov and his mother Leah. So we continue this week by speaking about one of the more famous stories in which Reuven is involved, and that is the sale of Yosef, Mechiras Yosef. And in this story, what's so interesting about it again is that we see Reuven sort of stepping up to pick up the mantle of leadership, but always, like, again, not just never able to seem to fully go the entire way. He tries so hard, but he just never is there entirely. So let's see. So you have source number one over here, the pasuk from Perek Lamed Zion, chapter 37, pasuk 21-22, says the pasuk. So again, just to paint the scene was that all of the brothers, they see Yosef, the quote-unquote dreamer, coming, and they decide they're going to kill him. It's a horrible thing that they want to do, but again, they're young teenagers, and they know that their brother seems to be taking a lot of their father's love from them, so they said, let's kill him. And what happens? Reuven decides to step in and try to save him in some way. So says the pasuk, Vayishma Reuven Vayatzilehu Miadam. The pasuk says that Reuven saves Yosef from their hands. Vayomer Loni Kanu Nefesh, and he says to them, don't hurt him, don't kill him, don't hurt him. Vayomer Alim is Reuven. Reuven says to them, Al Tishbuchu Dam, don't spill his blood. Hishlichu Osoel Habor, you should throw him in the pit Hazeh Asher Bemidbar Viyad Al Tishbuchu Leman. Reuven had this master plan. He told the brothers, I know you want to kill them. Don't kill them. Don't let the blood be on your hands. Throw him in a pit. What will happen to him in a pit in the desert? We all know what's going to happen to him when he goes into a pit in the middle of the desert. He's going to end up dying. But don't you shouldn't be the direct murderers of him. Let him die naturally after you throw him in the pit. Reuven thinking to himself, wink, wink, I'm going to save him later on. Once they throw him in the pit, everyone's going to go have lunch, and then I'm going to take him out of the pit, and he'll be saved. Now, what Reuven was planning on telling the brothers later on, after when Yosef came home for dinner that night, is a little unclear. But Reuven had this master plan. I'm going to trick the brothers into not killing him so that I can save him through this way. Of course, we know what ends up happening. Yehuda then comes back a little bit later, and he says, you know what, guys, we can't let him die in this pit. That's not appropriate. We should rather sell him to a group of merchants, and they'll do with him what they want to do with him. Maybe they'll make him a slave, but at the very least, we're not going to have that literal blood in our hands. So that's what he does, that they end up selling him. But Reuven was the person who stood up first. He said, I'm going to try to save Yosef, and he did. He very quite literally saved Yosef from the brothers, and perhaps it's because of him speaking up that ended up allowing Yehuda to have the courage to speak up. And the Mefarshim seems to have a very positive perspective of how Reuven led in this situation. Again, it seems like he didn't go the entire way. Why couldn't Reuven just have said, guys, don't kill him, let's bring him home for dinner? I understand we don't like him so much, but why did he have to suggest throwing him in a pit? The sentence should have been, guys, don't let his blood be in your hands. He's a little annoying. He's a younger brother who's a little annoying. Let's just take him home. Maybe we could beat him up later or something, but not kill him. But throwing him in the pit was his solution. So why did that happen? So the Chizkuni and Ravino Bachya both share perspectives on this that I think are relevant. First, we're not going to do it inside, but the Chizkuni shares in source number two that basically Reuven was so in the right and made such a positive decision when he saved Yosef like this by telling the brothers, let's not kill him, let's throw him in a pit, that we see that the first of the Arei Miklat, the cities of refuge that will be built later on in Eretz Yisrael and outside of Eretz Yisrael, right, there are three in the land and three outside of the land. So those Arei Miklat are those Ari Miklat, the first of them is going to be placed in the territory of Reuven as a result of the fact, as a reward for the fact that he tried to save his brother Yosef. That was his beautiful reward that he ended up getting. So the Chizkuni says, how positive, how good was it that Reuven did this? It seems like a little bit bad that he wanted to throw him in the pit, but actually no, he did save him, and that salvation ends up getting him a reward of having one of the Ari Miklat, one of the cities of refuge, in his territory. Rabbeinu Bachya says in source number 3, Kasha hayal Reuven eitzas achim. Says Rabbeinu Bach, you have to understand the context over here. You have nine bloodthirsty brothers who really want to see Yosef dead. What is he going to do? He was very difficult to go up against them. Bahaisa kavanaso latzilo. And Reuven, in his heart of hearts, he really meant to, he was going to save him. Right? What ends up happening later on, Reuven doesn't know that Yehuda then comes back later and he sells them to the merchants, right? Reuven comes back later and he's shocked, he's terrified because Yosef is no longer in the pit. So Reuven all along wanted to save him, and Ve'ilu Amarlo Nikano Stam, and if he would have told them, don't kill Yosef at all, Hayam Mare'at Smo B'Dvarav, he would have made it clear, Kiminiaso Zos L'Cham La'Lav, they would have wanted to hurt him also, they would have wanted to do something bad to Reuven also, if he would have suggested the crazy idea not to hurt the brother that's been getting on their nerves for their entire lives, they wouldn't have accepted it. So Reuven knew what he had to do, he had to take one step, step at a time, and so he said, here, let's not kill Reuven ourselves, let's throw him in the pit and he'll die naturally that way. And so thereby he was convincing the brothers step by step that eventually we'll be able to save him. But right now, you don't go from not murdering to saying, let's come home to dinner with us. You go from murdering to saying, I'm going to throw you in the pit and not be directly murdering you. And then after that, you say, okay, I'm going to save him. And maybe perhaps that's how we would have been able to explain to the brothers later on. You have to do it step by step. So Reuven was ultimately rewarded and applauded for how he acted over here. Was it a good thing? Was it the right thing? So it's a little bit unclear. I think the jury is still ultimately out on that. The fact that Reuven couldn't step up and stand up to all of his brothers is a little bit shocking. He is the Bechor after all. He is the firstborn, and the fact that he's the oldest brother should have given him some ability to say, hey guys, listen, I know that everyone wants to kill him, but we can't kill him. It's just not the right thing to do. It's not what the Bnei Yisrael do, but he didn't do that. And so again, even though he's applauded by so many of the Rishonim, there should be some, I think, thought in the back of our minds that see him not standing up to being the full leader that perhaps he really truly could have been. Okay, and in fact, if you want to get a glimpse of the type of leadership that Reuven had, Nechama Price suggests that Reuven's response to all this and his true colors are shown later on when Reuven is talking to the rest of the brothers. Once they confront Yosef, when he is threatening the brothers, accusing them of being spies, when they are in Egypt trying to get the food, again, when they don't realize that it's Yosef, but Yosef knows it's them, what happens? Source number 4, Perek Membeis, chapter 42, Reuven says to the brothers, then Reuven spoke up and said to them, did I not tell you, do no wrong to the boy, but you pay no heed, now comes the reckoning for his blood. Somehow the brothers realize, somehow Reuven realizes that the way that this man, again, they don't realize that it's Yosef, but they see it as a Mida Keneged Mida, that it's a punishment for how they treated Yosef all those years ago. But the truth is, it says Professor Price, if you want to understand how a true leader would act, don't look at Reuven. A true leader doesn't look at others and then start blaming other people for something bad that happens. What a true leader does is they stand up and they take responsibility. The fact that Reuven says, you, all of you guys, you wanted to kill him, and who knows what ended up happening to our brother. The fact that you did this to him, we're getting punished for that now. But Reuven should have probably said, listen, guys, we all did this, and I probably am at the helm of that ship, and now we're going to face it. But because he places the blame on others, shows that perhaps he's not the true leader that he really should be as the Bechor. There are two more incidents that take place that are worthy of talking about. The first in line is that of the fact that Reuven tries to protect Binyamin when they are suggesting to their father Yaakov that they would bring him down to Egypt. If you remember, again, we'll have to start to speed up a little bit because the 15 minutes are running close here. But next week we're going to start speaking about Shimon Gadol. Probably we'll do Shimon and Levi together, perhaps, because they really are two peas in a pod in a lot of ways. But we'll definitely be speaking about Shimon Gadol next week, and we know that Yosef captures Shimon of the brothers, and he imprisons Shimon. Why he chose Shimon, we'll have to speak about next week, but what's so interesting is the fact that Yosef says, I'll give you Shimon back once you give me Binyamin back, once you bring your youngest brother to me. They still don't know that it's Yosef at the time, but that's what he says, I want to see your youngest brother. Yaakov Avinu says, that's ridiculous, no way am I sending the second son of my most beloved wife down to some Egyptian man, I'm going to keep him with me. Reuven tries to step up and tries to convince trusts Yaakov at first. Eventually, Yehuda steps up and Yaakov ends up trusting Yehuda, but Yaakov does not trust Reuven. Why? What does Reuven say? Take a look at source number 5. Again, in Perek Membe's Pasuk Lamed Zion to Lamed Ches. Then Reuven said to his father, "You may kill my 2 sons if I do not bring him back to you. Put Binyamin in my care, and I will return him to you." Unbelievable, says Reuven to Yaakov. You can kill my children if I don't bring back your favorite child. Says Rashi, that is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. And Yaakov has a similar response, that's the most ridiculous thing that I've ever heard. Rashi says in source number 6, Lo kibel devarav shel Reuven. Yaakov didn't accept this that Reuven told him. Why? Because Amar Bechor Shote, who's that? He said, my firstborn is a lunatic. He's insane. Hu omer lehamis banav. He said that I should kill his sons if he doesn't bring back my son. What? V'chi banav heim below banai? Are his sons not my sons? Reuven's sons are my grandchildren, says Yaakov. And Yaakov Avinu was saying, my firstborn is telling me that I should kill my grandchildren if he doesn't bring back Binyamin, my youngest son. That's ludicrous, says Yaakov Avinu. And again, you see over here how Reuven is trying so hard. He's trying to push his father and again take that mantle of leadership and trying to push the father, Yaakov, to allow Binyamin to go with them so they can go to Egypt and get more food and also save Shimon. But ultimately, Yaakov is not pushed because it's a ridiculous statement that Reuven makes, that he's telling his father that he can kill his grandchildren if Binyamin isn't safe. So Yaakov sees that also, and he doesn't accept it. He doesn't like that. Again, Yehuda, the true leader, the mantle of the kingship that comes from the tribe of Yehuda, he's the one who ends up stepping up in this situation and ends up saving the day and allowing Binyamin and convincing Yaakov to let Binyamin go down. But that we'll speak about in a future week. But again, over here we see Reuven not stepping up to the full mantle of leadership. Finally, we have the understanding the status of the firstbornness, the bechorship, to Reuven. Right? We know that Yaakov very famously buys the bechorship, the firstbornness, from Esav. Esav sold it to him for a pot of lentil soup. And the question is, what happens to Reuven? Reuven technically at the end of the day is the official bechor. So what happens to it if he's the official bechor? Then he should be treated with the kavod, with that sort of level of respect, but he doesn't really get that level of respect. You see that it's sort of is diminished over the years, and clearly Reuben's not the main tribe. You want to point to a main tribe? Well, there are probably 3 main tribes that you'll have to think about. One is Yosef, the second is Yehuda. Also, Levi is sort of up there somewhere, which is confusing in its own right, because Levi, you'll see, was not always the best, but certainly Yosef and Yehuda are up there. Reuben, you never hear about Reuben really ever again. You hear about him throughout Tanakh, but you don't really hear of him as a leader. So what happened to that? So take a look at source number 7. That's the pasuk. This is the bracha that Yaakov Avinu, his father, gives him on his deathbed. He says as follows: Reuven, you are my firstborn, my might and first fruit of my vigor, exceeding in rank and exceeding in honor, unstable as water. You shall excel no longer, for when you mounted your father's bed, you brought disgrace. My couch he mounted. Unbelievable. The bracha from Yaakov to Reuven seems like a bit of a curse almost, or at least a disparagement. He's telling him, remember that sin you did, we spoke about last week, the sin that Reuven did with Bilhah? Yeah, that's how I remember you. I'm here on my deathbed. The last thing I have to say to you is, how could you do such a terrible thing? And so you see already that the way Yaakov views Reuven, and this was certainly going to be a certain level of foreshadowing and a prophecy almost for how Reuven is going to be viewed throughout Tanakh, and that is that Reuven is ultimately, technically, always going to be the biological firstborn. As Yaakov said, he's the first fruit of my vigor, but ultimately he will always be tainted in some way because of the mistakes that he's made. And the Pasuk in Divrei Hayamim in source number 8 spells this out explicitly. It says, the sons of Reuven, the firstborn of Israel, he was the firstborn, but when he defiled his father's bed, his birthright was given to the sons of Yosef, son of Israel, so he is not reckoned as firstborn in the genealogy. Though Judah became more powerful than his brothers and a leader came from him, yet the birthright belongs to Yosef. So incredibly, the Pasuk in Divrei Hayamim basically spells this out explicitly, that ultimately the true leaders and the true firstborn children, even though they're not technically the firstborn, the first biological children of Yaakov, are both Yosef and Yehuda, not Reuven. And that's a punishment, seemingly, for how Reuven acted in his life. But then source number 9 in the Sforno makes an incredible comment that I was talking with someone when we spoke about this in Shul before, that it's such an odd idea, but let's see what he says. It says, source number 9, Bechor Yisrael Shalom Nafal Mima'al Laso Bedine Shemayim Bebnei Tshuvaso. Unbelievable. Reuven continued to be the Bechor from, according to whose calculator? From Shemayim. From, as far as Hashem was concerned, Reuven was the technical Bechor. Ki'inyan v'yihiyu b'nei Yaakov shneim asar b'nei Leah Bechor Yaakov Reuven. Unbelievable, because if you remember the Pasuk that we read regarding what happened with Bilhah last week, the way the Pasuk read was that Reuven did this bad thing with Bilhah. We don't know exactly what it was. And at the conclusion of that, the Pasuk says that there are 12 tribes, which we interpreted to understand that was the great equalizer. We see that what Reuven did with Bilhah could not have been that bad, because the the end of the day, he was on the same plane as all the 12 brothers. He wasn't ousted for having done something irreparably bad. And so what the Sforno was saying over here is that what that teaches us is it shows us that because Reuven ultimately did tshuva for his negative actions, for his mistake over here, he is always considered as the Bechor as far as Shemayim is concerned. But then the Sforno makes a weird comment, and he says, Afal pi shenafal mimena b'dine Adam. At the end of the day, Hashem always saw him as the firstborn, but Yaakov never saw him as the firstborn ever again after that. So what does that mean exactly? A little bit unclear. What it seems to mean is that Hashem accepted his tshuva, but I guess on whatever level, Yaakov didn't. Yaakov was not able to forgive and forget, as we see on his deathbed. He literally mentions it to Reuven in his final moments, and because of that, Reuven is sort of ousted from that firstborn position that he has always tried so desperately to work towards. And ultimately, what I think we see from here is there are four basic ways that you can view Reuven. The first is I don't really agree with because it's a little too negative for me, but the rest, I think there are three others that I think should shine a really beautiful light on what we can take from the life of Reuven and the lessons that he has to offer us. So the first, of course, comes in source number 10, and it's an excerpt from Nechama Price's book, In Tribal Blueprints, and I'm not going to read it inside because we're already over time, but basically you could feel free to read it yourself. She basically says that what you see is what you get. Reuven, at the end of the day, was a failure. He tried so hard, but he was ousted. Yosef and Yehuda took his place. What do you have to learn from him? I don't know, I guess don't mess up as bad as Reuven. That seems to be the basic takeaway, which again, to me, that feels a little bit troubling. So, but that is a perspective out there. There are three other perspectives that I'd like to share. One is a perspective that I found on Chabad.org as like a Kabbalah website, so I found it on there, and I thought it was very interesting. I'm not going to read it again, but feel free to take a look at source number 11. But the idea is that is expressed here is that Reuven is the firstborn. And since he's the firstborn, he represents the notion of all first things. And what do you have about first things in life? Well, all things that come first in life can come with negatives or positives. So, for example, you have the notion of Bikurim, the first fruits that we brought to the Beis Hamikdash, what an incredible mitzvah that was. However, we all know that whenever you have the person who goes first, you have the trial run person, so not everything goes perfectly. What do you learn from Reuven? You learn the notion, perhaps, and this is my own interpretation, on top of this, but you learn the notion of maybe like Zrizin Makdimin, that Reuven was always trying to be the first one, always trying to be the best. He ends up failing, unfortunately, more often than not. But you can learn from Reuven this lesson of trying to be there first and trying to perhaps be the failure so that other people can succeed after you. And I think that's perhaps one takeaway. There's another takeaway that can be found in the Sefer Yetzirah and also the Bnei Yisrael, who quotes this idea. It's a very Kabbalistic idea, and that is that each of the 12 months of the year are connected to each of the tribes. Hopefully we'll try to allude to this in all of the, when we speak about all of the brothers. And the month that is connected to Reuven is the month of Tammuz. Why is the month of Tammuz connected to Reuven? If anyone who knows anything about Jewish months, Tammuz is like the second worst out there, right? Av is certainly, you know, you don't want to be connected to Av. We'll see who's connected to Av, because we know Mishenechnas Av Mematin B'Simcha, when Av comes in, we lessen our happiness. But if Av is so sad because it's the second half of the 3 weeks, the first half of the 3 weeks comes in Tammuz. So you don't really want to be connected to Tammuz. However, Reuven is connected to Tammuz, and the way that the Kabbalists speak about it is that Tammuz is a month of vision. Why is Tammuz a month of vision? Well, because it's connected to Reuven. What's the connection between Reuven and vision? Well, we said at the beginning last week, Reuven is Re'u, Ben. See that Leah was trying to show Yaakov, see, I have a son over here. And perhaps, therefore, the connection between Reuven and Tammuz and this notion of vision, of why Tammuz is a month of vision and why Reuven is referred to in his name as vision, perhaps there's this notion and this lesson that we could take from Reuven that he was actually a visionary. You look at Reuven and every step that he makes, although there seems to be somewhat level of flawed logic there, perhaps a misthinking in sometimes when he does something, he always had a vision, he always had a perspective, he always tried to make a plan to save everything. He also was always the first, you realize. He was the first person to step up when it came to selling Yosef to try to save him. He had a vision of how to save him. He also was the first person to step up when it came to trying to convince his father Yaakov to bring Binyamin down. He had a vision again of how it was going to all go down. Again, a lot of times his visions didn't seem to go well, but he always had a vision. He always had a plan. He always saw things perhaps in a different way than everyone else, against the tide of everyone else. And he was always the catalyst that caused everything to switch. Again, he was never the person to fully do it, but because of him, Yehuda always steps in after to save the day. And if not for Reuven, then Yehuda perhaps never could have even been there in the first place. So Reuven is a person of vision. He always saw things. He always planned things out. And that's another lesson that we can take from him. And then finally, one final takeaway comes from Avraham Shor in his Sefer HaLekach VeHalibov. He writes the notion an idea that we find regarding, again, probably the biggest misstep in Reuven's life, the fact that he did whatever he did with Bila, with the bed, or with her, whatever it was, and that is that Reuven was a Baal Teshuva. He asked God, he asked, I guess, his father as well, for forgiveness from this. And what we learn from Reuven is that you can make mistakes in life, but what do you do with those mistakes? Do you just forget about them and try to just, you know, assume they never happened? Or do you try to become a Baal Teshuva and try to say, you know what, I have made mistakes, but I want to grow past them? True, interestingly, Yaakov seems to never have gotten over that, and that's why he said what he said to him at the end of his life. But God sees that, and God understands that. And God saw that he made this mistake, but he came back from that. He was a Baal Teshuva from that. And since he was a Baal Teshuva, then Hashem, again, saw him as the Bechor still because of that. And so ultimately what we can learn from Reuven is perhaps to realize that we can make mistakes, but we can also grow from those mistakes and atone for those mistakes and become a Baal Teshuva from those mistakes. That hopefully should give us some level of perspective and understanding who Reuven was. And God willing, next week we'll continue with Shimon. Everyone should have a great night and a Shavua Tov.